This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. We live in an era of global warming. Although climate change is often described in global terms, its effects are localized and tend to disproportionately affect low-income communities of color, who are less likely to live next to parks and more likely to live next to industrial sources of pollution. A growing movement for what's being called park equity is working to ensure fairness in the distribution of green spaces and all the health benefits they provide. My guest is Grace Kotanko, program manager at Prevention Institute, where she leads the People, Parks, and Power, or P3 initiative. Her recent story in Nonprofit Quarterly is called What is Park Equity? Welcome to the program, Grace.
Thank you, Sonali.
So what is park equity? Let's talk about that. We think, you know, we've heard of terms like racial equity, but the idea of parks as even being something that figures into the equation around equity is maybe not something that a lot of people are familiar with. So how do you define park equity and why it's important?
Yeah, I think, you know, in your introduction, you framed it quite perfectly. Park equity simply is the making sure that all communities have access to good quality and well-amenitied parks and green spaces. And this is important because a lot of times I think people still think that parks are niceties or they're luxury amenities when in fact they're essential. There are a lot of studies that have supported that access or proximity to parks and green spaces is a really protective factor for health. You know, it's a space where folks have access to physical activity. It's a space where, you know, people can really have time in nature, social connection and respite. And, you know, there are also the environmental benefits like filtering air, removing pollution, buffering noise, cooling temperatures. And so that's why it's important. And so the idea of park equity, really, when you think about it, it doesn't mean to just give all communities equal resources. You have to take into account folks that have been disinvested in historically. So these are low-income communities, communities of color. When you look at a map and do kind of layer where the green spaces are and factor in where low-income communities and communities of color are, oftentimes you'll see that there are not a ton of green spaces, especially in urban communities where low-income and people of color live. And so park equity really is coming up with the policy solutions, the systems change solutions in order to start to correct that, to make sure that these communities especially are being given the right resources to access parks and green space.
So it is intimately linked to racial equity, to health equity then?
It totally is, yeah. I think a good way to think about it is, you know, park equity, a good way to think about it in the way that we talk about it a lot of times is that it's a thread towards racial justice and health equity. So like if you follow, it's a pathway towards it. So if you follow the thread of like how park inequities are happening, why are these communities experiencing park inequities? Why do they have less parks, access to green space? If you keep following that to its root cause, you'll see that it's usually, you know, things like redlining, racial segregation, divestment in the urban core, and also those things, those root causes are linked to so many of the issues I think that we are also experiencing now, like the lack of affordable housing, the displacement of people from their neighborhoods. And so that I think is the link to racial justice. So yeah.
So I imagine that it's fairly sensible for people to think about, well, if you live, say, walking distance from a park, when your kids are young, they have spaces to play in and have that physical activity that's so good for health. The trees near where you live are able to filter out pollutants and just basically have your air be more oxygenated, also providing shade at a time when we're experiencing these extreme summers. So there's lots and lots of health and mental and physical health benefits that go with living near parks, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Also, I imagine just a space for adults, not just kids, to socialize and form those neighborhood ties with one another that make for resilient communities.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
So what is the P3 initiative? Tell me about the three P's in the P3 initiative, and how does it, what is the plan or the map, if you will, the roadmap to achieving park equity?
Yeah, so the P3 initiative, P3 is short for the People, Parks, and Power Initiative. It's a national funding initiative that's funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation. And through it, it's really the first national initiative of its kind that's funding community-based organizations, grassroots organizations, and their own policy and systems change approaches towards parks and green space. And Sonali, I'm sure you're aware of what the difference between upstream versus downstream solutions.
Actually get into it. Let's tell our audience a little bit about what you mean by where the solution lies.
Totally. Yes. There is what I like to kind of frame it as is like a prevention parable, quote unquote. Basically, if you think about there's a stream, right, or a river, and then there's a person that's fishing downstream on the river, and then he notices they notice that there's a person being brought along with the currents, kind of drowning, and so that person thinks that, oh, I need to go save them. And so he goes out to swim and saves that person. And then a few minutes later, he sees another person coming downstream, being taken by the river. And so he goes up and saves that person again. And this happens again and again, right? And so after some investigation, he realizes the reason why there are people drowning in the river is because there's a bridge upstream that's broken. And so people keep trying to jump over this gap on the bridge, but they keep falling, right? And so if you think about it in that way, the upstream solution, literally upstream from the river, is to fix that bridge, right? So if you fix the bridge, people won't leap over the gap. They can cross the bridge safely and no one is going to fall in the river. And so that serves sort of like as an analogy for what an upstream solution is. So the upstream solution being fixing the bridge, the downstream solution means saving everybody that falls through that gap, and which means that you're probably going to get tired someday and people are still going to continue kind of feeling that the traumatizing effects of like almost drowning, right? So thinking about it from that point of view too. And so that was a pretty long analogy, all simply to say that when we're thinking about upstream solutions, we're really thinking about what the root causes of park inequities are. And so the way that we think of it as is, you know, you can build parks in neighborhoods, and that is sort of like the downstream or reactive solution. That's important. You know, it's like it's important to have parks projects within neighborhoods, but you're not going to undo what is causing park inequity in the first place by sort of reacting to the problem, if that makes sense. And so the approach—
Right, so a downstream solution would be to address the health problems, which of course need to be addressed, but yes. The upstream solution is to say, why are those health problems being caused in the first place and what can we do about it?
Exactly, yeah. And so that I think is where the policy and systems change approaches come in. And so looking at historically, why has it been difficult to build a park in this neighborhood? Let's look at zoning codes. Or historically, why is it that we get parks in this neighborhood, but we get amenities that folks from our culture in this neighborhood don't really feel like is appropriate, you know? And maybe it's because people haven't been authentically been engaged in the process of the design of a park. So you start looking at those root causes, and start thinking about how you can change those through policy and systems perspective. And so the P3 initiative really is coming from that approach. And we are supporting right now 14 organizations across the US in their own efforts towards park equity. And they're all approaching it in very different ways.
Grace, is it not as simple as saying, well, where are the low-income communities of color located where there are no parks, and let's put parks or build parks in those communities? Or is that too reductive and simplistic?
I think that would be great. I think that would be a great approach, but in the long run, it still kind of entails some things to think about, like maintenance of those parks and sustainability, right? And also how is that going to be funded? And so
carefully folding those parks into the communities, it requires care.
Yes,
ultimately,
yeah.
Right.
It requires care and involvement by the communities that are living there too, you know.
Right. They have to have buy-in, and there has to be it has to work within that community. Most solutions that work aren't one size fits all, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
That said, there, you know, our communities, our society, I should say, always finds money for certain things, right? Like policing. and it's these upstream solutions that there's always a question of, well, where's the funding going to come from? But let me ask you about another upstream approach, which is, shouldn't this idea of park equity start really at the city planning level even?
Yeah, I think that is a good place to start. You know, we just within their People, Parks, and Power initiative, for example, we have some organizations that are looking at their city zoning codes, you know, and kind of doing some research on why historically, what are the historical causes through those planning policies and zoning codes to why they are experiencing park inequities in the communities that they're serving. But, you know, I think part of the People, Parks, and Power initiative too, actually, we have, besides the grant making component, we have a field building component. So park equity is very nascent, it's very new. And a lot of times, public agencies such as city planning departments or even environmental organizations, you know, even though they're the best of intentions of building parks for everyone, they might not have the capacity to think about, you know, how they are folding in racial justice into their initiatives, how they are folding in health equity into their initiatives. And so we, part of the P3 initiative is also starting to look at that and how to build a network within those agencies so that this type of work is more supported in those environments, if that makes sense.
What are some models from our lessons from other movements for public health that you draw from in the P3 initiative to achieve park equity?
Sure. I think that one movement in particular that really aligns with the framework that we're using for People, Parks, and Power is the tobacco control and the smoke-free policy movement. And in a number of ways. For one, it's the shift of the narrative of like, oh, this is an individual problem. You know, it's based on the person's decision to smoke, the person's behaviors and attitudes around that, versus looking at it as a broader responsibility of these governments and agencies to actually educate people and provide those protective policies around the distribution of tobacco. So shifting from that individual versus systems and policy change perspective. And another way too, it's the power building component of that we saw in the tobacco movement, where really, you know, equipping community members with education and the language to talk about it and collecting their stories and using that and giving them the power so that they could enact these smoke-free policies. So that's been, we've been drawing a lot of inspiration from that movement in particular.
Right. And then how, can you give me some examples of where it's all playing out? You mentioned that there are a number of partners around the country that you're working with. How are communities directly being involved in the movement for park equity? Are there any places where you're seeing some results?
Yeah. So as I mentioned before, we have 14 grantees through the People Parks Empower Initiative. They're all across the US. But I will mention a few, especially because we just came back from a round of site visits in the Midwest in particular. So the support that Prevention Institute provides our partners through these grants are a lot of technical assistance. You know, we connect them with folks who can support them with their communications, their narrative change, to support them with power building, policy development, and research as well. So that's sort of one way that we support them. And then also we support them through really fostering this network of organizations that are working on park equity, because I think historically it's like you have people and organizations working on park equity initiatives sort of in different places of the country, but it's always been in isolation, you know, of each other. And so that's, I think, one of the gifts that we're able to bring into this People Parks Empower Initiative is to start connecting those dots. And so I'll just name a few in the Midwest. Like I mentioned, One Love Global in Detroit, it's a youth organizing group where they're really taking the youth participatory action research approach, and youth are leading the research and the policy change within their communities to look at how parks and green space can be places of healing. And again, you know, you mentioned earlier, it's like a lot of times the police departments are getting funded when it comes to like, how do we make our communities safer. And so the youth over there are really trying to change that narrative of police doesn't make our communities feel safer. You know, we make our communities safer. And so they're looking at changes to do there. And then we've been able to do cross-site visits as well. So our group in Minneapolis, Hope Community, which is mentioned in my op-ed, they have been in the park and green space equity field for about 2 decades now. So they know what park equity is all about. They've been doing the work for a really long time. And we've had the opportunity to bring folks from other groups, other states into their initiative, you know, so that they can start. So there's some peer learning there that's happening too. But yeah, those are a few examples of things that are happening. There's much more. Yeah.
Where can people find out more about park equity, about the work you do with the Prevention Institute?
Sure. Well, our website, preventioninstitute.org. We have a lot of resources over there, including if you look at our page for the People Parks and Power Initiative, you'll see all of the 14 groups there. Great. With a description of what they're doing. I would also recommend our Changing the Landscape paper that we put out, and it really catches everything that we've been talking about, Sonali, about what are the policy and systems approaches towards park equity, what have been the root causes, how is it related to racial justice. It really just captures all of that.
We'll post a link to that from our website. Grace, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
My guest has been Grace Kotanko, Program Manager at Prevention Institute, where she leads the People, Parks, and Power, or P3, initiative. Her recent story in Nonprofit Quarterly, which is called What is Park Equity, is also one that we will link to. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.